pardon?
System of government characterized by extreme dictatorship. Seven across.
Oh, I see. It's fascism.
Fascism. Wonderful.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're gonna stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Psychological warfare has been waged against America for much of this century. This war for the mind of the public has been facilitated by the emergence of mass media and the transformation of American education by behavioral psychologists. In the book 1984, George Orwell warned that people were in danger of losing their human qualities and freedom of mind without being aware of it while it was happening because of psychological, emotional, and intellectual manipulation. Mind control. Mind control in America. The most effective way to protect yourself from subconscious manipulation is by being aware of how it works. What the conscious mind believes, the subconscious acts on. It works like programming a computer. Information is fed into a computer, and the computer acts on it. However, if the information fed into the computer is wrong, it still acts on it. If a person believes something that is not true, the memory banks of the subconscious mind do not correct the error, but act on it. The theory of cognitive dissonance holds that the mind automatically and involuntarily rejects information not in line with previously accepted thoughts and beliefs. Many of the things that people believe are never questioned, especially when the information has come from a reliable source. It becomes easy to lose sight of why people believe some of the things that they do.
Unser Führer, Adolf Hitler, dich, dich, dich.
People can be led to believe something that is not true when that information is carefully timed and presented by an accepted and respected authority. The purpose of propaganda is to direct public attention to certain facts.
The whole art consists in doing this so skillfully that everyone will be convinced that the fact is real,
wrote Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf. To be effective, propaganda must constantly short-circuit all conscious thinking and operate on the individual subconsciously. The principles behind the big lie of propaganda are the same principles of mind control, hypnotic suggestion, mental programming, distraction, and repetition. Distraction focuses the attention of the conscious mind on one or more of the five senses in order to stop conscious thinking, thus producing a state of mind that is similar to daydreaming. Think of the times you have caught yourself staring blankly at the television screen, losing all sense of time and place. When you stop conscious thinking and your mind goes blank, this is the hypnotic state of mind. This altered state occurs naturally, but can also be induced by clever manipulation. Think of the times you have seen flashing words in TV commercials. The flashing words are a distraction for your eyes to lock onto in order to induce hypnosis. The purpose of this is to reduce any resistance to the message by stopping all thought and analysis. Watching television often produces an altered state of consciousness. Though not consciously perceived, the television screen, while appearing static, actually flickers. Any repeating light or sound pattern can lead you into an altered state. A hypnotist uses patterned speech by varying the pacing and inflection of his voice to induce the state of mind in his subject. It is in this state of mind where one is the most receptive to mental programming. Whether or not the information takes hold in the mind depends on two factors: trust in the source of the information and repetition of the message. Trust in the source of the information induces acceptance of the message as true, even if it is not understood. Repetition of the message embeds it in the subconscious so that acceptance of its truth and accuracy becomes a conditioned response. Thus, this information will be accepted as true without thinking about it whenever it is presented again. Subliminal perception is the process whereby you receive and respond to visual and sound information without being aware of it. The message in the form of printed words, pictures, or voices is presented either so rapidly or so faintly that you are not consciously aware of having seen or heard anything. In 1957, marketing researcher and psychologist James Vickery tested subliminal ads in a New Jersey movie theater. The messages,
"Hungry? Eat popcorn."
And,
"Drink Coca-Cola,"
were flashed on the screen at 1/3,000th of a second every 5 seconds during the movie. Sales increased for popcorn and Coca-Cola. Every major advertising agency in North America has sponsored extensive research into subliminal perception. Vance Packard's 1957 book, The Hidden Persuaders, revealed that American industry was researching the use of subliminal messages to motivate people to buy their products. Dr. Wilson Brian Key has documented in 4 books the widespread use of subliminal ads by the advertising industry. Messages programmed directly to the subconscious bypass critical analysis and the conscious choice to accept or reject the message. Repetition of the message constitutes mental programming. Subliminal messages have been used in music, radio, television, and movies. In November 1957, TV station WTWO in Bangor, Maine, experimented with projecting a subliminal message on television. In 1958, radio station KOL in Seattle broadcast subliminal messages under the music played by its disc jockeys.
"How about a cup of coffee?"
was one, and another was,
"Someone's at the door."
The movie The Exorcist used both subliminal sounds and pictures. A full-screen death mask of Father Karras was flashed on the screen at 1/48th of a second a number of times during the movie. The consciously unnoticed word pig appeared many times throughout the movie. The terrified squealing of pigs being slaughtered and the buzzing sound of angry bees was mixed into the soundtrack. Laboratory experiments show that people will react to certain words, pictures, and sounds with quickened pulse, faster breathing, sweating palms, and other indications of heightened emotions. People actually fainted in response to this movie. Many became nauseous, and many had nightmares. William Peter Blatty, the author of the novel and producer of the movie, was a CIA operative who served as the policy branch chief of the Psychological Warfare Division of the United States Air Force.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars.
On October 30th, 1938, thousands of people fled from a crisis that had no existence except in their imaginations. A radio broadcast of a dramatization of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds led thousands of listeners to believe that the planet Earth had been invaded by Martians. The 1983 TV movie Special Bulletin about terrorists exploding an atomic bomb in Charleston, South Carolina, prompted numerous calls to stations across America from people who wanted to know if it was real. In both instances, despite disclaimers, people thought they were listening to an authentic newscast. Think for a moment about the way newscasters speak, and you will realize that they all talk the same way, regardless of their ethnic background. Whether they be black, white, Hispanic, or Oriental, with few exceptions, they all sound alike. The patterned speech of a newscaster is similar to that of a hypnotist. The eye contact made with the viewer is also used by the hypnotist. Emotions can be stirred, attitudes and states of mind revealed by nuances of tone and variation in vocal quality. The camera can reveal the smallest movement of the most subtle change of expression and give it significance and definition. With the selective use of camera angles and judicious cutting, it is simple to distort the meaning of what someone says, not only by cutting out statements, but by cutting in a reaction shot or by adding laughter or applause. A picture may be worth a thousand words, but it can also deceive one into believing something that is not true.
To give you an opportunity to see whether slaughtering infidels on the road to holy martyrdom is right for you, we now present The Onion Explains, ISIS. ISIS and its militant radical Islamist worldview either evolved from a complex series of socioeconomic conditions and geopolitical decisions dating back generations, or it evolved because there is evil in the world. To discover the true roots of ISIS, one could consider centuries of Sunni-Shia warfare that in the mid-2000s culminated in the brutal subjugation of Sunnis by a U.S.-backed Shia-Iraqi government. Or one could just say ISIS formed because there are bad guys out there. So, to combat ISIS, we should either strategically exploit their own fundamentalist worldview against them while taking care not to exacerbate the conditions that led to their rise in the first place, or just drop every bomb we've got on the enemies of freedom. The internet-savvy terrorist group knows that building an effective online presence is crucial to converting young people to jihadism and has attracted thousands of followers with its popular website, www.reasonswhythewestisbad.com. The site, which notes five flaws of Western society, including the poor state of the American education system and the government's inability to get much done, has been highly successful at prompting young Westerners to join ISIS in droves, as evidenced by testimonial videos posted online.
My friend sent me a link to the site and changed my life. We'd get together every day after school and talk about all of the five ways the West is bad. Now it must perish in flames.
ISIS is driven by a single, all-encompassing desire to determine whether or not God is real. The group's leaders realized that all they had to do to find out if a higher power is out there is to simply institute a caliphate, instigate a brutal war, and defeat the armies of Rome at a battle in Aleppo, Syria. As ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi said in 2013, if the end of the world unfolds as God foretold, with the anti-Messiah Dajjal emerging out of eastern Iran and slaughtering all but 5,000 Islamic fighters, then they'll know for sure that the Lord exists and they can rest easy. But if such actions do not cause Jesus to return and join in jihad just in time to impale Dajjal on a spear and save Islam, then ISIS will simply call it a day and live with the fact that there is no God.
This passenger plane has been forced to land in Cyprus after a man, believed to be wearing a suicide belt, hijacked the aircraft. It's understood the Egypt Air jet was taken over by at least one armed man while flying from Alexandria in Egypt to the capital, Cairo. Officials say the pilot of this Airbus 320 was threatened by a passenger strapped with explosives. The airline says the plane was then forced to land at Larnaca Airport, where negotiations led to the release of some passengers. Footage from the airport shows a number of them being able to leave the aircraft before getting onto waiting buses with their luggage. It's not clear how many remain on board. We understand the pilot had informed authorities that he was threatened by a passenger who possessed a suicide belt and forced him to land. The hijacker then asked police to back away from the aircraft. According to an Israeli military source, Israel scrambled warplanes in its airspace as a precaution in response to the plane hijacking. The incident will undoubtedly raise questions over security at Egyptian airports. By police, a suspected hijacker who forced an Egypt Air passenger plane to divert to Cyprus is led into court. The 59-year-old Egyptian national has been remanded in custody for 8 days on suspicion of hijacking the aircraft with a fake suicide belt. He did not speak but gave a victory sign as he was driven away by police. The plane was flying from Alexandria in Egypt to Cairo when a passenger demanded the internal flight land at Larnaca Airport in Cyprus. 81 people were on board the Airbus 320. All were released unharmed and clearly relieved when they eventually touched down in Cairo.
The 2 hours, no, 3 hours, till 12 o'clock I was in the aircraft, so you can talk with him. He was very easy. So, and he told only... No, nothing will happen, so and after that he let us go.
A photograph showing a British man posing with the alleged hijacker inside the plane is being widely circulated. Ben Innes says he was just trying to stay cheerful in the face of adversity.
This guy was so cool, he's a British guy, and he asked him to take a picture and he took the picture.
Cypriot authorities have described the suspect as psychologically unstable, but claim the incident was not terrorism related.
ABC News exclusive with one of the people held hostage on that Egypt airplane. Ben Innes, who famously took this photo with the hijacker, was one of the passengers trapped on that aircraft for 6 hours, and I spoke with him. The real story behind this photo. I talked to him moments ago. Ben, thanks so much for joining us. First of all, we're glad you're okay, that everyone on that plane is okay. But let me start by asking the question that so many people around the world were asking. What were you thinking in that moment when that photo was taken?
in that moment that photo was taken, I was thinking, you know, I hope this pose looks good. The minutes preceding that photo being taken were probably a bit more important.
How did you decide to even take the photo in the first place with a man who you didn't know whether or not he actually had that suicide belt on?
So there was a whole host of things going on at that point. There was a limited amount of information being relayed from the cabin crew who were negotiating with the with the hijacker. I don't speak Arabic. The majority of the interaction was taking place in Arabic. In order for me to get a better understanding of the situation and to engage with this person, I thought of several ways in which I could, you know, further interact with him, of which taking a selfie was one.
There was an actual strategy behind taking that photograph with the hijacker?
Yeah, believe me, it was a very thought through process.
And what were you trying to accomplish by taking that image?
I wanted to interact with the hijacker. I wanted him to understand that I was a human, I was doing human things, that I wasn't just a nameless, faceless victim, that I was a real living person. And, you know, I wanted that to be clear. So he would understand that. I also wanted to get a better look at the device, at him. I needed to understand if he had any other weapons, if there were any other hijackers I hadn't seen who were with him.
I'm so glad that it did end well, but is there any regret in calling it the best selfie ever?
In terms of regret, I have no regrets whatsoever.
Question.
Yeah, of course.
There were reports today that the Syrian forces or Syrian army, Syrian regime forces, are about to take Palmyra. Do you have any information on that?
I have seen those reports. I'm not sure if I have any specific information on. You're talking about the ISIL controlled. In Palmyra. I don't have any specific updates on that. I mean, you know. We have continued to see, more broadly speaking, the regime carry out attacks on or strikes or alleged violations of the cessation of hostilities, and we're clearly going to investigate all of those through the task force.
This is against Daesh, though.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't have any specific to this. I don't have any information. I'll take the question.
Do you want to see the regime retake Palmyra? Or would you prefer that it stays in Daesh's hands?
That's truly a... I think what we would like to see is the political negotiation, that political track, pick up steam. It's part of the reason why the secretary is in Moscow today, so we can get a political process underway and deepen and strengthen the cessation of hostilities into a real ceasefire. And then we...
You're not answering my question.
I know I'm not. I'm giving you a broader view.
Okay.
And then we can all increase our efforts to go after Daesh and dislodge it.
Take a quick crack at it from another angle. I mean, you know, you guys said that the fight against Daesh should continue, right? That Daesh should be continue to be targeted. The same thing with Jabhat al-Nusra and so on. Now, we know that Palmyra, Tadmor, is occupied by Daesh. So why, in this case, would this be considered a violation of the ceasefire?
It doesn't, and I didn't mean to necessarily convey that. I was talking about violations that we've seen on the part of the regime against opposition parties who are part of the ceasefire or the cessation of hostilities. No, I mean, look, I mean, broadly speaking, you know, it's not a great choice in either or, but, you know, which is worse, Daesh or the regime? You know, but we think Daesh is probably the greater evil in this case.
Daesh the dog, mistaken for terrorist organization. While trying to pay for his dog Daesh's walking fees, a San Francisco man's online payment was recently blocked because the dog's name resembled that of a terrorist organization's. Bruce Francis, 55, was transferring $374 from his bank account to his dog walker, as he's done every month for years. He wrote, "For Daesh," in the memo line. Chase Bank thought the memo was suspicious, apparently equating the word Daesh with Daesh, and flagged the transfer for review by the U.S. Security Department. Daesh, or Daesh, or however it's pronounced, incidentally, is another word for ISIS, but less favored among ISIS militants. Basically, everyone thought this cute pup was a terrorist. Although his moniker bears some resemblance to the terror groups, the pitbull mix reportedly has no links to ISIS other than having a similar-sounding name. Besides, you would no doubt make one of the least effective terrorists. Francis was quick to call the feds and get things straightened out. In light of the recent terrorist attacks, Francis said that a temporary inconvenience is okay if it helps law enforcement.
لا
تعال نخلف كل حقيقة تعال 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 نعوض كل
بابا
تعال تعال
يلا
تعال يا يوسف تعال 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 تعال
An attack has decimated the British capital.
This summer, get ready for the most shocking, unbelievable action movie ever made. A film that will change the way you see the world forever. A film some people said should never be made.
Hey, how's the war on terror, sir?
Great. Nobody suspects us at all.
Hey, cool. Can we do some more?
Sure, a film you probably shouldn't watch. A story so appalling, it'll make you want to kill your rulers. Get ready for Terror War on You. From the makers of 9/11, 7/7, Je Suis Charlie, Paris Attack 2, and National Lampoon's Belgian Jihad comes the latest in a long line of manufactured terror attacks.
Terrorists have launched an attack on London. Everyone be very afraid and vote fascist warmonger from now on. Don't even think twice about how many little sandbag babies Britain has bombed over the years. Just stay calm and remain ambivalent about our support for murdering regimes in the Middle East for decades.
Starring Uncle Tom, American Guy.
Shalom, Moisha. This terror war's working great. It's like taking freedom from scared people. Let's keep making terror happen. We all want to funnel vast sums of money to our defense industry. But it also creates fear, and our populations, when they're afraid, will let us get away with anything.
Oh, okay, Uncle Tom guy. I'll get Mossad to hand some more guns and bombs to crazy Muslims we found on the internet. Then we'll tell them Allah wants them to blow this up and kill some nice white folks. Boom, baby. It's too easy. You know, Uncle Tom guy, we could make this happen anywhere in the world. Why, with just a few intelligence agents from Mossad and the CIA, no city on Earth is safe.
Terror War on You. So scary, you'll shit your pants. Vote fascist, turn a blind eye to militarism, and ignore the murder of innocents. Terror War on You. It'll make you beg for oppression, demand a police state, and surrender your freedom like a virgin on prom night. Terror War on You. Believe it or die.
Oh my God.
That's chapter one. Would you like to have chapter two? You better, son of a bitch. I know the way.
I'm Gregory Dawson, sitting in for Clifford Baines, who was accidentally erased. On the heels of states which have passed abortion laws requiring the viewing of an ultrasound, Arkansas has enacted a new law that requires women to name their unborn baby and paint a nursery for it before undergoing the procedure. Should other states adopt similar abortion laws?
Of course they should. It's just common sense that viewing an ultrasound image of a fetus and then painting a nursery either pink or blue helps give women the information they need to be sure they're making the right decision.
Exactly. We have to support women through this process. Naming their unborn child is part of that.
Yes, and if a woman clears out a room in her house and assembles a crib and buys three toys for the child and a few other simple steps and then decides that she wants to purge that baby from her womb, then she can.
But I'm worried that the law doesn't go far enough in helping these women.
How so?
Well, because during the mandatory three-week reflection period after the nursery is painted, mm-hmm. the woman could just close the door and not even look at it.
That is true.
Yeah, she should be required to sit in the nursery at least an hour per day surrounded by baby booties and pacifiers so she won't regret rushing into a decision later.
Yep. Now, some critics say that this law may be too time-consuming for many women to comply with.
I agree. It's too complicated. Simply requiring women to watch a computer simulation of their baby, what it would have looked like, saying, I love you, mommy, would have been enough. These extra measures are simply taking valuable time away from our medical professionals.
Makes sense. Like the provision that requires nurses to follow women around with a giant boombox that plays the sound of children's innocent laughter over and over again.
But those studies show that these extra steps actually make the laws work better.
Yeah.
For example, the Missouri law requiring pharmacists dispense birth control in a blood-red container with a skull on it while eerily chanting, God have mercy on us in Latin, has actually increased how careful teens are about sex.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Similarly, Texas this week started a so-called Take a Life, Save a Life program, ordering women to give a kidney while undergoing an abortion.
abortion. And it's a great program. Yep. Look, if a woman isn't ready to have her kidney removed, then it's clear that she has doubts about getting an abortion.
That also gives the women so many choices. If they don't want to give a kidney, they can just opt to donate all the blood in their body.
Pro-life, yes.
What is ban? How do you ban abortion? How do you actually do it?
Well, you know, you'll go back to a position like they had where people will perhaps go to illegal places.
Yeah.
But you have to ban it.
You ban it and they go to somebody who flunked out of medical school.
Are you Catholic?
Yes, I think.
How do you feel about the Catholic Church's position?
I accept the teaching authority of my church on moral issues.
But do you know their position on abortion?
Yes, I do.
And do you concur with that position?
I concur with their moral position, but legally, I get to the question. Here's my problem with it.
No, but let me ask you, but what do you say about...
It's not funny.
...your church? Yeah, it's really not a funny thing. What do you say about your church? They're very, very strong.
They're allowed to, but the churches make their moral judgments, but you running for president of the United States will be chief executive of the United States. Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
Ten years,
I don't
what?
Know. That I don't know. That
well, why
I don't
not?
Know. I don't
you
know.
You take positions and everything else.
I do take positions and everything else. It's a very complicated position.
Many times, Tara, it's disingenuous to say that I have not disowned those things, because on this very network, I've said it was inappropriate for Donald Trump to retweet that picture of Heidi Cruz. However, you just said a man who's guilty of assault. Tara, do you know that you are defaming someone? You could actually be brought into court for alleging that he did something that he did not do. So, Tara... No, you're not, Tara, but I would watch your words, because that's a violation of the highest principle of journal ethics.
Are you kidding me?
It's the violation
right
of
now,
our criminal
Kelly?
Justice system to presume
really?
Someone guilty on TV when there are two varying accounts, Tara.
One at a time. So
okay,
you're not
Tara,
concerned about Donald Trump's words when he lies in one sentence. He says one thing and then says something else. You're not concerned about Donald Trump when he says that women should be punished for having abortions and then changes his mind three times later, you know, after 2 hours when he got in trouble for it.
I haven't been asked about that, so don't put words into my mouth when I haven't been asked about that subject.
Because you consistently defend the indefensible with Donald Trump, and you're doing it again today.
No, I don't. I just point out to you things that I didn't.
It's about
Tara,
common decency,
please stop.
Ashley.
Because you are putting words into my mouth.
Let's just
sorry, Haley, finish the thought.
I'm tired of people putting words into my mouth, Tara. I'm tired of you saying that I said something about his abortion comments when I haven't been asked about that. You need to stop generalizing about things I have not commented on. Please go check the record. Someone fact-check this. Media, please go fact-check this. I have not commented on the subject, and words were just put into my mouth.
News tonight, and it has to do with the comments Donald Trump made during his town hall with Chris Matthews yesterday, in which he said women should be punished for having an abortion. Mr. Trump has since clarified that what he meant is that doctors should be punished. But tonight, Mr. Trump went on the Fox News channel and gave a whole new other explanation for how his remarks came out that way. Watch this. This is amazing.
Now, we know you've since clarified your point in written statements, but we want to hear it from you.
You really had to hear the whole thing. I mean, this was a long, convoluted question. This was a long discussion, and they just cut it out. And frankly, it was really convoluted. And if, in fact, abortion was outlawed, the person performing the abortion, the doctor or whoever it may be, that's really doing the act or is responsible for the act, not the woman, is responsible. So that's the way I've always felt. I've had the same stance exactly as Ronald Reagan. I mean, I've had it, and I've had it from the beginning. So my stance is the exact same as Ronald Reagan.
So a lot of people are making a lot of hay out of this. I'm trying to figure out, did you misspeak or did you misunderstand the question?
Well,
or
it could be that I misspoke, but this was a long, convoluted subject. We talked about Catholicism and his religion, and Chris went back and forth about that, and this was a very long, convoluted discussion, which frankly they don't run on television because it was too long.
This was a long, convoluted discussion, which frankly they didn't want on television because it was too long. This was a long discussion and they just cut it out. I don't know who they are, but that appears to be Mr. Trump making an allegation about this network. And the allegation that he's making there is false. MS Matthews et al. That town hall was taped as a live event, which is not to say we aired it live as it happened, but it was taped and aired in its complete form. Everything that happened with the Chris Matthews, Donald Trump town hall, all of it went to air. The network did not clip it, did not cut it, certainly did not shorten Mr. Trump's answers. The official statement from MSNBC on Donald Trump's claim tonight reads as follows, quote, "The town hall interview with Donald Trump was taped in advance and then aired in its entirety. Absolutely no part of the exchange between Trump and Chris Matthews was edited out." We know that. And Mr. Trump knows that too. And any allegation otherwise is provably untrue. Seriously. I mean, even trying to sell this to a competing network, that is ridiculous.
January 22, 2015, Eric Schmidt, chairman of the world's change agent, Google, told the elite crowd at Davos that the internet would soon disappear.
The internet will be, there'll be so many IP addresses because of IPv6, so many devices, sensors, things that you're wearing, things that you're interacting with, that you won't even sense it. It'll be part of your presence all the time. It'll be part of your presence all the time. It'll be part of your presence all the time.
If the internet is so omnipresent, it becomes part of you.
These smartphones are really supercomputers, and everybody here has one. An interesting statistic is that on the order of 400 million people in the past year got a smartphone.
If we're all online, all connected, all the time, 24/7.
Thank you. Good night.
Is this all iPhone lights over here?
It used to be lighters.
But now it's iPhone flashlights lighting up the night. Wow. It's all iPhones. I've never seen so many supercomputers in one place before. I feel like Ray Kurzweil would be proud. I know Eric Schmidt is.
If you can no longer discern where it ends and you begin.
Well, we're going to become increasingly non-biological to the point where the non-biological part predominates and the biological part is not that important anymore.
What does reality really mean anymore?
We are living in a computer programmed reality, and the only clue we have to it is when some variable is changed and some alteration in our reality occurs.
Imagine one day we have these powerful supercomputers and we really, with fantastic fidelity, can create a universe in silico, if you will, which has sentient beings within it that don't know that they are in a simulation.
So there's one thing you know for certain, that is that you exist as a flesh and blood human being. My goal is to convince you otherwise.
What is real? How do you define real? If you're talking about what you can feel, what you can smell, what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain.
It's so, in principle, easy once you have that technology. Come home at night, you flick it on, you create a universe, and you sort of kick back and you watch what happens. It's therefore much more likely, just based on the statistics, that we are in a simulated universe than that we're not.
We would have the overwhelming impression that we were reliving the present, deja vu. Perhaps in precisely the same way, hearing the same words, saying the same words.
Oh, déjà vu.
I submit that these impressions are valid and significant. And I will even say this, such an impression is a clue that at some past time point, a variable was changed.
What is it?
A déjà vu is usually a glitch in the matrix. It happens when they change something.
Reprogrammed, as it were, and that because of this, an alternative world branched off.
We're in a phase where our lives more and more are beginning to take place in a virtual reality. It's not just a new development in games or an online play area. It's now the dominant forum in which the world interacts and happens.
Our lives are more and more being carried out through virtual communication, through trendy technological gadgetry and social media platforms that now seem like we couldn't live without them when they didn't even exist just a few years ago.
It's a part of the way that I communicate with my friends.
Many of us now have more friends online than we talk to in real life. The attraction of common interests creates circles of online peers that for some become more important than the real people in our communities and our physical surroundings. Do you know who your neighbors are?
We communicate through ones and zeros faster and more often than with our vocal cords. We can be face to face, but predominantly over a digital connection, disembodied from our five-sense reality.
The other day, I saw a woman in a parking lot. She was almost hit by a car, could have easily been. She was staring at her phone. And the interesting thing is she was looking someone eye to eye. She was doing a FaceTime type of video Skype with what looked like probably her daughter, a little girl. And here was a mother and child having an intimate moment over a digital connection, a wonderful technological thing. But at the same time, she was disconnected from her physical reality and in potential danger, walking around completely oblivious. And yet, somehow she was connecting. But what world was she in?
I'm not sure here, where we are, is real at all. This feels like a game.
Sweet.
Our lives are being turned into an endless string of data to be tracked, traced, collected, and analyzed without ever looking the person doing it in the eyes.
I just don't think we're getting watched enough in this society. I definitely think at every stoplight we need to have multiple cameras and a searchlight, megaphone-looking searchlight thing.
If it's even a person.
We're all online. Everything we're doing is being tracked in one way or the other. Many people don't know that their phones, by virtue of the E911 law, report their location. And you can't turn it off, by the way.
Extensive information gathering on every American. Electronic surveillance. The era of the computer. Invasion of privacy. Growing government and corporate power over our lives. A people plagued by dehumanization, loneliness, and violence.
We're losing so many of our freedoms as we redefine our identities and sense of self. Who we really are, and why we're really here.
New developments in machine intelligence will make us far, far smarter as a result.
It'll become more and more realistic. Go out 10 years, it's going to be just about as realistic as real reality. Go out 20 years, 25 years, these nanobots, these blood cell-sized devices, will be going in our bodies. We'll have some go inside our brains through the capillaries, non-invasively. They'll be interacting with our biological neurons. They'll put our brains on the internet, and they'll also enable us to enter a virtual reality environment from within the nervous system. So if I want to go in a virtual reality environment, the nanobots will shut down the signals coming from my real eyes and my real skin and create the signals that would be appropriate for the virtual environment. And then it'll feel like I'm in that environment.
You know, up to now, I kept thinking that everything science did was good. My training, I suppose. Now I'm not so sure.
Who controls this virtual world? Who owns it? Are we our own selves? Are we free? Are we making decisions or are gadgets deciding our lives for us?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
What color is an apple? Hello? They hung up.
Did you break the computer?
Wow, that was better than Blade Runner. Because more and more, it's not even a person. It's a surrogate.
And your name is Mr. Machine.
What's wrong? Nothing. I just feel that he's talking stronger. If you have a problem, don't hesitate to ask for assistance. Thanks, I'll be alright. Call 340-FUNKY.
Are all of us already transhumanists? By definition, it's a moving target. We're in transition, but to where?
To what? It's simple. The singularity isn't about one crystallized moment where a choice is suddenly made to merge with the Borg.
We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
So electronics are boxy and rigid, humans are curvy and soft. That's a mechanical mismatch problem. I started making electronic tattoos. So I'm wearing one here on my arm, and it has an antenna and some sensors embedded in it. And what we plan to do is work with them to advance a tattoo that could be used for authentication.
It's about an incremental ratcheting up, an encroachment.
In virtual reality, but it will feel very real. We'll ultimately be able to do that with real reality too, like self-organizing swarms of nanobots that can link themselves up into a virtual body.
What you see is how God made you. We're not meant to experience the world through a machine.
Look at these planes, they're writing numbers in the sky.
It's like a secret combination.
Wow, that's crazy.
Not just on your basic sense of privacy or how you interact with one another in the world as you know it, but an encroachment on you.
Now, it may be true that 10 to 20 year olds don't want to wear a watch on their wrist, but you can be sure that they'll be far more interested in wearing an electronic tattoo, if only to piss off their parents.
We can create bodies with nanotechnology, we can create virtual bodies in virtual reality, that the virtual reality will be as realistic as real reality, the virtual bodies will be as detailed and convincing as real bodies.
As virtual reality becomes more realistic, what will become of reality?
What is reality?
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Into the world, and it's Now, go find the others. .com.
Wait, I... Ding, 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 ding. Looks like we're out of time. Goodbye.